And welcome back to Coast. Jeffrey Smith back with us as we talk about genetically modified organisms and foods. Jeffrey, you had a few more stories for us. Let's jump into them.
Yes, indeed. So this person was talking to someone from the U.S. government who was saying that they needed genetic engineering in order to be able to control the crops of other countries. And the person says, well, but you have to, you're promoting GMOs in the United States as well. Says, oh, yeah, we have to do that in order to get other countries to accept it. So you can, you know, obviously controlling the food supply of a potential enemy is a big way of weaponizing food. I think it was, there was someone that said if you want to control the people, you control the food. Of course, if you want to control the food, you want to control, it was Kissinger that said that if you want to control the food, you got to control the seeds. So it's a technology that could provide a tremendous amount of control as well as profits. Now, it's interesting that the U.S. government has been marching so in line with the biotech industry that even an epidemic in the 1980s did not dissuade them. There was an epidemic that came from a genetically engineered food supplement called L-tryptophan, and it was in the basis of bacteria that was genetically engineered as a factory to produce the tryptophan. And so starting in 1984, these were early GMOs. In 1984, Showa Denko KK, a big Japanese chemical company, took the vats that they would create, the fermentation vats that they'd create the tryptophan, and they started to genetically engineer the bacterial strains. And every few months or a year or two, they would change it and add another one so that they were bringing more of the choosing which proteins and compounds that are being produced by the bacteria so they wouldn't have to add it manually. Well, they weren't aware that, unfortunately, the contaminants that were almost certainly resulting from this process of genetic engineering was causing sickness and death. Something called EMS, eosinophilia myalgia syndrome, was striking people and in some cases causing complete paralysis where they couldn't even breathe. And ultimately, it was an epidemic that took the lives of about 100 Americans and caused 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick. And yet, the FDA withheld the information about the genetically engineered origins of this epidemic to Congress when they gave a report. And instead, they blamed EMS on all tryptophan, took all tryptophan off the market, yep, and that allowed Prozac to flourish because it turns out the tryptophan was an alternative to Prozac and didn't have the side effects. But
a natural alternative, too.
Exactly. And there was an actual policy that you can actually read the letters in the FDA where it was to try and stop the sale of natural alternatives to the pharmaceuticals. Now, by blaming all tryptophan on this eosinophilia myalgia syndrome, they were ignoring the facts that only those that consumed the Showa Denko version got the disease. And the FDA never ended up going to Japan and recovering the bacteria and doing independent analyses. They basically buried the research, buried the investigation, and protected genetic engineering. Similarly, there was information showing that the genetically engineered insulin called Humulin could cause some people to die because they wouldn't get notification in their bodies that they were going into insulin shock. It was completely pushed through because it was a genetically engineered drug and it was going to be good for the industry, and certainly people have died as a result. Same thing with bovine growth hormone. It's amazing. There's a hormone in the milk from cows treated with bovine growth hormone, which was Monsanto's drug released in the 90s, that I talked to a former Monsanto scientist. He said three of his colleagues measured that hormone in the milk, and as a result, they no longer drank milk unless it was organic. One bought his own cow.
Jeez.
And now, with the salmon, the FDA just approved the salmon to be imported in this country and grown in an Indiana facility. It turns out that they have higher levels of this same IGF-1. They also have higher levels of allergic reactions when the blood of those who are allergic to salmon are exposed to it.
If you order salmon in a restaurant, will they tell you that it came from a Frankenfish farm or not?
Right now, there's no genetically engineered salmon sold in the United States, but it is sold in restaurants in Canada unlabeled. And it's possible that even the restaurant doesn't even know. Now, the reason why the FDA didn't allow it to be on the market earlier is because the representatives of Alaska, who were trying to protect natural salmon, passed a law that the GM salmon had to be labeled. And so instead of fast-tracking the salmon, they pulled it because they were trying to figure out a labeling scheme. But when Congress in 2016 decided to give the USDA the ability to label GMOs, and they just came out with a fake labeling bill, which we can talk about, complete fake labeling bill. As soon as that came out, the FDA realized, wait a minute, we already have now a policy for how to label GMOs, so we don't have to delay it. We can just allow the salmon on the market. Well, it turns out the salmon may be on the market as early as 2020, but the labeling policy doesn't require labels until 2022.
And what do you mean by fake labeling?
So what happened was, you know, in Europe, if something is derived from GMOs, it has to be labeled. And if there's any accidental contamination, then it has to be labeled if it's above 0.9%. In the United States, this labeling policy is such that if you can't, most GMOs would not be labeled. So GMOs that have high fructose corn syrup or soy lecithin or soy oil, you can't necessarily test the final product to identify a GMO. So they're giving it a pass. So the vast majority of products that contain GMOs in the supermarket would not require a label. And then if it does require a label, they can use a little symbol that has the word BE. No one knows what BE means. They're calling it bioengineered. Why? They don't want to use the word GMO because it has a stigma. So they have a nice little picture that's like an outdoor scene with the sun and BE. So we did a contest on our Facebook page to name what BE should stand for, and the winning entry was buy elsewhere. Now, in addition to the BE symbol, you can say, you know, bioengineered, which no one knows what it means, or it can have a QR code, which means you have to have a smartphone to take a picture of it, and then you get to the website, and they have to navigate in the website to figure out what you're looking for, or it can possibly have a toll-free number or a URL, anything to obscure the transparency. Now, there's no enforcement, and so some very large companies that sell lots of food have been heard saying, we're not going to do anything. There's actually no penalty for non-compliance. And they allow 5% contamination, and they're ignoring all of these gene-edited products. So the USDA just deregulated 20 of them over the last few years. One's already on the market, a high oleic soybean oil. And they're trying to claim, the makers of this high oleic soybean oil, that it's not a GMO because it's made from gene editing, and that does not fall within the fake labeling bill's jurisdiction. So it's basically as if Monsanto were to write this, and it's trying to tell people, give them a false sense of security that if they don't see the word BE or bioengineered, that it must be safe and non-GMO. But it turns out the opposite is true. If you don't see a product that says non-GMO project verified after this, then you can expect that it might be GMO. So it's going to backfire on the industry because no consumer by 2022 are going to believe the USDA, and they're going to require third-party verification, which is expensive for these companies. So as I say, it's going to backfire.
All right, let's go to the phones. Mitch is our first-time caller in Jacksonville, Florida. Hey, Mitch, go ahead.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing.
A question on, I guess, with GMOs and maybe altering brain chemistry to bring out faults in people, which is more maybe mental illness that we're seeing today, or to influence people, the younger generation being influenced, you know, especially getting a social media and the message and maybe, you know, having them form certain opinions. But again, it stems from maybe pharmaceuticals, what we eat, something that can alter brain chemistry to make it more like a hive mentality, if you will. Any thoughts on that?
Sure. It's a very good question, Mitch. You know, it turns out that when genetically engineered crops became part of our food supply, some long-term pediatricians, like my friend Dr. Michelle Perrow, started to see changes in the cognitive abilities and behavior of children. A lot of the ADD, ADHD, and the autism, and also these complex digestive issues. And when people got off of GMOs and the Roundup herbicide sprayed on foods, they often have improved cognitive functioning. So in the survey I did with 3,256 people who reported getting better from 28 different conditions, reduction of brain fog was the fourth most popular condition. Increased energy was number two. Digestion was one, and weight loss was three. But also there was improvement of concentration and memory. So we actually already have a situation where the GMOs generically affect mind and mood. There was, I think number five was reduction of mood problems like anxiety and depression. Now, why is that? Well, Roundup herbicide is sprayed on most GMOs because most GMOs are, quote, Roundup ready. And Roundup blocks the metabolic pathway by the gut bacteria to produce the precursors to, and these you've heard of, serotonin, melatonin, and dopamine. If you don't have enough of those, you may end up depressed or anxious or stressed. It also can damage the microbiome, the gut bacteria, which is also necessary to produce adequate amounts of serotonin. So you have serotonin deficiencies that may be resulting from genetically engineered crops and the Roundup sprayed on them. And then you have all sorts of other problems, like this is pretty serious. In the blood of the pregnant women in Canada, they found 93% of them had the BT toxin insecticide produced by genetically engineered corn. It is a insecticide that pokes holes in human cells and is toxic to red blood cells. But they also found it in 80% of the unborn fetuses. Now, there's no blood-brain barrier in the fetus, and so if you have a hole-poking toxin in their blood, it might get into the brain and might cause damage to the brain before that child is even born. Then you end up where there's an inoculation of the microbiome at the time of pregnancy, and so the mother's gut bacteria and biome, in other words, the bacteria, et cetera, from the mother gets transferred to the baby in the birth canal. But that microbiome can be altered because Roundup is an antibiotic, killing the beneficial bacteria and allowing pathogens to grow. And so when you have altered gut bacteria, that can also affect mood behavior and be a precursor to many diseases. So when you look into the details of GMOs and Roundup, it appears that it violates or challenges the very foundation of our health. And I've just mentioned a few, but I could throw in mitochondria, I could throw in hormones, I could throw in mineral absorption, I could throw in digestion. The fundamental bases for our health are damaged. And one other thing, Mitch, and that is don't just avoid GMOs. Switch to organic, because Roundup is now sprayed throughout the food supply. It's sprayed on all the grains, it's sprayed on beans, lentils, it's sprayed on potatoes, sweet potatoes, citrus orchards, vineyards. It's found throughout the food supply. It's found in beer and wine, in so many things. So if you want to avoid these negative effects, switch to organic and see what happens to the mood, behavior, and your health.
What do you think the worst thing could happen from GMOs?
Well, you know, there's a whole set of GMOs that were released recently, and one was a potato and one was an apple. Well, they use a double-stranded RNA technology. And it's very interesting that you ask that question that way, George, because the maker of that potato wrote a book, and he called it Pandora's Potato, The Worst GMO. So he's the guy that worked first for years for Monsanto, then was hired by J.R. Simplot to produce the potatoes, which are currently on the market, which do not brown when they are sliced. The potatoes are called innate potatoes. There's also apples called the Arctic apple, which does not brown when it's sliced. So if you buy pre-sliced apples from Amazon, it's probably the Arctic variety, unlabeled as GMO. Now, this uses a technology where they put in genes that produce an RNA strand that then hooks up with a similar code on the DNA and silences the gene. I talked to a former USDA researcher who blew the whistle on this, pointing out that the same RNA in one apple or potato, for example, could theoretically silence the genes in the animals or humans that eat that apple or potato. Because it just takes a little code matchup between this 21 nucleotide sequence and any one of the 2 billion base pairs on the human genome. If there's a match, then it's possible that that gene can be silenced, and that could be a catastrophe. So in other words, we're talking about reprogramming our genetic expression. Now, how bad could it be? They fed a single meal of double-stranded RNA to honeybees, and they chose the double-stranded RNA because they thought it would be used as a control because they didn't think it would have any effect. They checked the genome of those honeybees twice in the next few weeks. It turns out over 1,400 genes, about 10% of the genes in a honeybee, were altered in their expression from that single meal. So when you talk about what could go wrong, we're talking about a complete reprogramming of our DNA. And it's possible that the genes inserted into genetically engineered crops might also transfer to human DNA. We do know that it transfers to the DNA of gut bacteria. And if it continues to function, that could be a nightmare. For example,
we
talked about the insecticide produced by the corn. If you eat that, it might turn our intestinal flora into living pesticide factories if that gene that produces that insecticide were to transfer to human gut bacteria and continue to function.
Let's go to Pat in Minneapolis, east of the Rockies. Hi, Pat. Go ahead.
I want to mention the island of Dr. Moreau, and
I
want to introduce you to what I think is a genetically modified locust. And here's the introduction. The locusts look like horses ready for battle. On their heads, they have what seem to be crowns of gold, and then their faces are like men's faces. Their hair is like women's hair. Their teeth are like lions' teeth. Their chests were covered with what looks like iron breastplates. Well, I just want to say myself that that reminds me of a beetle. And the sound made by their wings is like the sound of horse-drawn chariots rushing into battle.
Sounds biblical.
They have tails and stings like those of a scorpion, and it is with those tails that they have the power to hurt people for 5 months. So here we've got, in chapter 9 of Revelation, we've got a locust that is part scorpion, part beetle, part,
part everything. Well, hold on. We're almost at the break here. But, Jeffrey, I guess her tone is, we play around with Mother Nature, it's going to bite us.
And you know something, it's like medicine, it's like so many things. Instead of using the intelligence of nature and enhancing it, we're actually imposing our will on it with partial knowledge and tremendous side effects. So, yeah, I've seen pictures of mice that have ears growing in their backs. You know, it's just ridiculous what's happening. We're turning animals into factories to produce, medicines. Nothing can go wrong there.
Yeah, indeed. Jeffrey's websites are all linked up at coasttocoastam.com. A couple of his books include Genetic Roulette and Seeds of Deception, and his movie is called Secret Ingredients. And we will be back in a moment with final phone calls with Jeffrey Smith on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Jeffrey Smith with us. Let's go to Kevin in Mayor, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Kevin, take it away.
Oh, thank you for taking my call. My concern is that I've noticed I live near the Bradshaw Mountains in Arizona at about 5,000 foot altitude, and I've noticed that the migrations of the mostly the butterflies and the hummingbirds and the bees are just decreasing every year. We see less and less of them, and the fruit trees in the area are less productive. And I was wondering how that might be affecting things.
What do you think, Jeffrey?
Well, there's a lot of documentation on the reduction in butterflies and bees. They're two of the insects that are being hit the hardest. It's interesting. There's a history with GMOs and the monarch butterfly. There was research done out of Cornell that showed a particular genetically modified corn would kill the larva that it was being had or laid by the butterflies, and that there was a big controversy. I covered this in my first book, Seeds of Deception, where the biotech industry decided to fund a bunch of research, and before most of that research was even complete, they wrote a press release at a conference and released it, claiming that it had proved that the butterflies are actually safe, and that's not the case. The people who were actually at the conference agreed that it wasn't the case, but because they had released a press release, other news agencies wrote that it had been solved and it wasn't the genetic engineering, and so it was just one of the ways that they manipulated the media. Now, that was with the toxin, the BT toxin in corn that produces it, the insecticide, and they did confirm later that a particular variety did, in fact, kill larvae. But now, the monarch butterfly is being killed off also because of the Roundup Ready crops. Roundup, it kills all of the biological diversity, all of the plants in the area, and it kills the milkweed, which is important for, it's the food for the larva, it's the food for the butterfly as part of their migration. And when they wiped out vast amounts of milkweed, then they ended up probably causing this tremendous loss in the monarch. But also, we find that with glyphosate or Roundup, you have honeybees that can't find their ways back to the hive. What it can do is it can damage the lactobacillus and other beneficial bacteria in the gut of the honeybee, and they need that in order to digest. So there's honeybees dying of starvation, even though there's plenty of bee bread in the hive, and that we think is because of the glyphosate. Now, there was an organization that was testing for that and called Biologics. They were doing research, but you cannot find any of that research anymore because they were purchased by Monsanto, which probably tells you that they were onto something that was important.
Next up, let's go to Barbara in Los Angeles. Hey, Barb, go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yep.
I have a question for your guest. It's kind of a blast from the past.
All right.
There was this case several years ago with this Canadian farmer, Percy Smyser, where Monsanto accused him of stealing genetic material, and he had an organic canola crop, which he'd lovingly developed over many years, and there was a court case about it, and I kind of forgot what happened. I wondered if your guest knew anything about it.
Oh, he sure does. Go ahead, Jeff.
Absolutely. Yes, Percy and I have seen each other on almost every continent. He's a friend, and he didn't have an organic farm. He had actually just a conventional canola farm that had a two-mile-long road along it. And what would happen was he would see sometimes trucks carrying canola seeds, and the wind would blow and the tarps would blow up, and there'd be a black fog that would rise in the air and land on his fields. So now he was just crossed or sort of seeded with the Roundup Ready seeds. He also had neighbors that had Roundup Ready canola, and the seeds would blow over into his property, and he was sued by Monsanto because he ended up harvesting his own crops like he did every year for decades and replanting them, and that actually violates the patent. So it went up to the Supreme Court in Canada, and it turns out he was found guilty of violating the patent, and it said in the finding it didn't matter how the seeds got onto his property. It didn't matter that he didn't want them.
The fact that he had them.
Exactly. Yep. Made it. He was violating the intellectual property of Monsanto. Now, there's another farmer who has written a book, or a book was written about him. He was actually a seed saver, a seed dealer, a seed cleaner, and apparently they attached the people that were hired by Monsanto, allegedly, attached GPS broadcasting device so that they could follow his whereabouts. They'd approach all of his clients, according to the book, as customers, and then threaten the customers that if they continued to use him as a source, they would destroy him. His house or his father's house was buzzed by an unmarked plane. A helicopter landed in his field. There was a car that had replaceable license plates. In fact, it got caught in his yard, and he confronted the person, and the guy was arrogant and said, "You'll never get us." He was his life was threatened, and in fact, in the trial, when the person admitted that they threatened his life, then Monsanto insisted that they settle because they did not want that to go public, and so they settled for an undisclosed amount. But I spent some time talking to him. I read his book, and it's amazing the details of how they. You know, he was shot at, I believe, or there was attempts on his life that he described. It was absolutely crazy far worse treatment than Percy Smyser, but it seems that there's probably many others that have had treatment like this, but in the settlement they can't talk about it.
Jeffrey, what's this story about a plant-based burger that when you bite into it, it looks like it's bleeding red blood?
Oh, my God. This is the
what is this?
Burger. This burger, we talked about the tryptophan thing where they turn bacteria into a factory to produce L-tryptophan. Well, the burger turns yeast into a little mini factory, and they put genes in from a root from the soybean, and it produces something called heme, or leg hemoglobin, and the leg hemoglobin causes this red substance in this plant-based burger. Now, when they originally submitted it to the FDA, asking for generally recognized as safe status, the FDA said, no way. You have this protein that's never been part of the human food supply, and you did a poor job of isolating it, so when you took it out of the fermented soup, you ended up with 47 other proteins that constitute about 25% of that substance that you added to your burger, and none of those have been characterized. So this is certainly not genetically generally recognized as safe. It's completely new to the human food supply, and Impossible Burger decided to market it anyway because there was no requirement for them to achieve GRAS status. And then under the Trump administration, the FDA reviewed it again and said, okay, we're going to call it GRAS. We're going to call it generally recognized as safe. Nothing had changed. It still has all of these potentially dangerous and damaging proteins. Now, we learned earlier in the interview about the L-tryptophan that killed 100 people and caused 5,000 to 10,000 to fall sick. And the only reason they found that epidemic was because the symptoms were severe, fast-acting, and rare. If all three of those characteristics were not in place, if it weren't severe, if it was just mild cold, or if it weren't fast-acting and it took a long time, or if it weren't rare and it was just the promotion of existing common symptoms, no one would have tracked it back to the genetically engineered L-tryptophan. So people eating the Impossible Burger might be getting significant problems that they don't know about. So my theme that I want to spread is, friends, don't let friends eat the Impossible Burger. And it's available at places like Bear Burger and restaurants, and they're going to introduce it into supermarkets. And it's based on what they call synthetic biology, which is just genetically engineering bacteria into factories to produce these products, which we think are very unsafe.
Yikes. Tom in the Bronx, take it away, Thomas. Go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hey, Tom.
And your guest. I'd like to say that listening to all of these revelations, I knew about the story about Percy Smyser. I heard him on the WBAI radio. He was interviewed, and they made his life a horror show. And it seems like the old saying is, if you can't beat him, join him. Maybe we'll all have to become genetically engineered.
They may do that. There's a Chinese doctor working on that now.
Yeah, I say, well, we'll have to become genetically engineered, and it'll be a genetically engineered world after all.
What about that Chinese doctor?
Well, you know, it's interesting. There's been an outcry all over. And just recently, last week, a bunch of scientists called for a moratorium on genetically engineering humans, you know, where you can be inheritable. But they didn't actually call for a ban. They just called for a moratorium. They want light touch regulation. And so even though there was outrage that they genetically engineered humans, it was interesting. These girls, they changed the gene, supposedly, that made them susceptible to HIV. But what they didn't realize, or what they didn't acknowledge, that there's a lot of research that when you do the gene editing in one location, then it actually can edit and cause changes throughout the genome. And so they never sequenced to see what other damage might have occurred. And we don't know. These girls are already born, and they're the first, as far as we know, humans that were genetically engineered. And it was in a way that can be inherited by their offspring. I remember that Dr. John Fagan, who became famous in 1994, he was a researcher doing genetic engineering of cancer research. He gave back existing and future grants to the NIH of $1.6 million because he was a protest saying that he believed his research could be used to genetically engineer humans in a way that could be inherited. And so early on, years ago, scientists were taking stands against that. No one had been in history had given back grants to the NIH, but he did that in protest. And here we are now where someone from another country can do it, and there's no universal laws to stop it. So if you want a designer baby, it's possible that in the future you can find someone in the black market or possibly in a rogue country, or you can just start moving things around and never know whether you've actually caused another disease or a change in a characteristic or a personality or an emotion, because all of it is connected.
Jeffrey, what was it that got you interested in this in the first place?
Well, actually, it was that John Fagan, that scientist who gave a lecture in 1996, and I attended the lecture, and he said, you know, we know as genetic engineers that the changes are not precise, they're not predictable, and yet companies like Monsanto want to use this imprecise, unpredictable technology and put it into the food supply, which means everyone who eats it can get sick potentially. And then in addition, once you put it into the environment, it could cross-pollinate and be permanently part of the gene pool. Now, I learned about this, and almost no one in the United States knew about it or was talking about it. And I realized this was a communication tragedy. And I had background in education, communications, marketing, and I decided to just pitch in a little, George, and help out to sort of translate the science into English, and I've been doing that ever since for 23 years, interviewing scientists all around the world, traveling to 45 countries, speaking at conferences, teaching doctors, etc. And what I've been doing is translating the science, and translating not just the science, but also how the biotech industry undermines and lies about the science. Some of the ways that they rig their research is so blatant, it is so caught them red-handed blatant, that it's amazing that they get away with it. But they've also captured the regulatory agencies. They've captured the ministries. When I travel to a country, the local activists tell me which politicians have been captured. Those are the politicians that don't meet with me. Those are the politicians that simply release the talking points given to them by Monsanto.
For people who want more information on your movies, your books?
Well, I think the number one recommendation is to go and watch Secret Ingredients. Go to Secret Ingredients. movie.com, and be sure, even if you go off to watch it on iTunes or Amazon or Google Play, go to secretingredientsmovie.com and sign up to receive information, because virtually everyone who sees the film, it becomes desperate to eat organic. A mother told me her two teenagers watched it with her, and they became angry at her for allowing them to have any non-organic food, and they all took plastic garbage bags and threw out everything in the house that wasn't organic. And these were teenagers. So we've seen that kind of result across the board, secretingredientsmovie.com. The mothership of the websites is called responsibletechnology.org, and you can sign up and get activist information and educational information. And we also have a YouTube channel. In fact, I interviewed the lead attorney who won the case against Monsanto with really dramatic stories, better than primetime Law TV. It was really interesting to see the inside scoop of what was happening at the Lee Johnson trial that resulted in Monsanto getting fined $289 million by the jury. And so we have a lot of interviews. I just did an interview and I recorded it today with the genetic engineer.
Well, you keep in touch with us, Jeffrey, and give us the latest whenever you get it. Up next, Bill Phillips joins me. Signs from the Other Side.